Welcome, everyone. This is your one and only source, a Gossip Girl podcast. I'm Olivia.
And I'm Miranda. Today, we're going to talk to you about season one, episode 11 of Gossip Girl, which is called You Can't Take It With Jules.
Yes, which is the movie title references You Can't Take It With You. Mm-hmm. I don't know this one, but I feel like I've heard of it. Sounds a little rom-com-y, but I think it's a Christmas movie. Oh, okay. That's cute. That makes sense.
Yeah. Tell us about the director and the writers.
Okay, so the director for this episode is Erica Watson. She's directed a lot of different episodes of random TV shows. The writers are identical twins, Janika James and Jashika Ashel James. They're both writers, story editors, and producers from Empire. And they have a memoir coming out on December 10th. They're like about being identical twins working in Hollywood. They're like adorable. That's interesting. I really like them.
I guess it's not a Christmas movie, but it's like, I don't know, old school in that way that like it could have been mm-hmm. Christmassy. Yeah. I don't know. But I did want to correct that it's not a Christmas movie.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like a rom-com title if I've ever seen one, but I don't know if that's
true. The son of a snobbish Wall Street banker becomes
definitely
engaged
a rom-com
to a woman from a good-natured but decidedly eccentric family, not realizing that his father is trying to force her family from the home for a real estate development. So,
dang. Okay. Big rom-com energy, but okay.
There's something there. I think it's described as a rom-com.
Okay.
You know, the threat of being homeless. What a funny premise.
Right. What a way to fall in love. As you're being like eminent domained by a real estate developer.
Yeah, by the OBs of the world.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's what we have for the preamble-y part. It's not a lot for this one, but we have some new characters, because of course we do. And do you want to just jump into it?
Yeah, okay. So first group, there's a lot of separate plots going on. So I kind of like broke it up a little bit more.
There's five.
Yeah. But everybody's is kind of distinctly on their own. Like everybody's pretty separated this episode. Mm-hmm. So Julian et al. Is kind of where we start. So at the Sky Palace, Julian sends away the yearly Christmas tree delivery, bah humbug, because she's not in a great mood. She later overhears her friends discussing how nice it was to not have to deal with her the previous weekend. They all had a weekend without Julian, and they weren't mad about it. When she arrives home again, her grandma is there, and she tells Julian that Davis has signed over many of her assets to Julian in trust, but Grams is her new legal guardian. Grams has no intention of keeping the Sky Palace or allowing Julian to live unsupervised in New York City, which means she will be moving to Indiana, where Grams lives.
Imagine Julian having that haircut in Indiana. Like, I get that it's the cool girl thing to do in New York City. I mm-hmm. don't feel like it would go over very well in, like, Mike Pence's Indiana, you know?
No, I just don't see it even in Peter Buttigieg's Indiana. I don't see it. I don't see it in any Indiana. I don't see it in St. Louis. Like, I don't
know. Buttigieg.
Isn't that what it – that's his name, right?
Pete Buttigieg.
Whatever. Close enough. I was close for a politician.
But, like, he's not there anymore, you know?
But he was, right? Yeah, he was governor of Indiana.
He was.
Okay.
No,
the fact
mayor.
That I know a governor of Indiana, I feel like really, I feel like that's a plus in the right direction.
His whole thing is being Mayor Pete, and you're like, yeah, he's a governor.
Oh, no. Whatever. Where was he mayor of?
A city in Indiana.
Oh, okay. Must have been like South Bend or something like that, because I don't think
it literally was South Bend.
Okay. Okay. So I don't see it. No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't go bad. No.
Also, does Julian's grandmother remind you of the fairy godmother from Shrek, or is it just me?
The glasses with like the high collars. Yes, I see.
I just don't believe this woman is Davis Calloway's mom.
And like I feel like it must be that it fits. I could see this whole character being molded around the fairy godmother from Shrek, because she has very like, you know, She's very like nice on the outside, but like she is like she's not buying anybody's
shit.
She's
fairy godmother from Shrek meets Jerry from Succession, and that's how I'm going to describe her. In an effort to stave off moving to the Midwest, which relatable, Julie, that's a joke to Olivia,
right? Aren't we all always?
Yep. Julian tries to show Grams all that New York City has to offer because it worked so well with Niklot. Her grandmother is really only concerned about Julian's safety and ability to thrive in a city that seems to only ruin people like it did Davis. They head to the law department where Nick is surprised to see just Julian since Zoya has told him that they were having dinner together. Grams remains unimpressed and unconvinced. Fair.
Right. I think Grams misattributes the city as what ruined Davis, and I don't think that's fact true.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of thought process that you would need to have when you find out that like your son is doing this to people.
Right. Right.
She's like, it's not me, so what could it be?
Right, exactly. He left me and did all these terrible things. It's like, right, but where did the first 18 years come from, Grams? So Audrey finds out that at the school fundraiser that we get to later in the episode, that Julian will be moving to Indiana the next day and tells her that she is family. Zoya is also makes up with Julian later on, and we watch and she wants to catch up over coffee the next day, presumably at Ralph's, the only coffee store in all of Manhattan.
Yeah, it seems to be the one that they go to the most, except for when it was like Julian and Obi talking about Zoya and like how they're gonna remember that scene in
episode
7.
Yeah, it was like that empty meetup. It was like a cute
but
like coffee place.
It also seemed like Le Pen Quotidien, so I don't know.
Okay. so Graham sees how close Julian is to her friends and has a change of heart, and she gives Julian the keys to the Sky Palace. However, Julian decides to move in with Nick and Zoya instead.
Yeah, at this point, I'm still holding out hope. Like, Julian has the keys to the Sky Palace. Nick and Zoya are getting kicked out. It seems kind of inevitable, especially when Julian mentions the closet space. Like, it feels as though this might be what's going to happen, but I really, like, in my heart of hearts, I think we're losing the Sky Palace.
It feels very deliberate that Grams hands the keys to Julian, you know? Like, it feels like a very deliberate choice that, like, we're seeing this, like, handover of the keys. But also, what were the initials that were on that key fob? It was, like, N.A., wasn't it?
I don't know.
It wasn't like DC. It was definitely, it was like NA or something. Cause I noticed it twice because I was looking at it and I didn't write it down, but I'm like, these are no one that we know.
Is that like Graham's initials maybe?
I don't know. I don't think so. Cause I thought it was NA.
Is it like BH for like Beekman Hotel?
I don't think we're supposed to know that it's the Beekman Hotel, but it was weird because it was like a key fob that had someone's initials on it, and they weren't Julian. It wasn't JC or DC, or I think it was like NA or AN or something like that. It was something that like, and the fact that they like showed it made me think it was it was like something we're gonna call back to. But that's about as good as I can.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what the initials are, which is sad. But yeah, I don't know. We've talked about it, but like, I think we are going to lose the Sky Palace in season 2 because it's someone's actual home that they live in. It's probably their like, you know, second, third, fourth, whatever the hell home that they're not living in because of like COVID in the city. Like, and that's probably why they were able to use it. But now that like everything's coming back, I feel like you maybe lose the Sky Palace, which is so truly devastating to me personally because I love the Sky Palace.
Right. So of the homes that I think we're forefeiting are the brownstone in the West Village and then the Sky Palace, which like seem to be two good ones that we're like really sacrificing, which makes me sad.
Yeah, it is. It makes me sad too. And that's really, that's the Zoya and Julian and all of that storyline. Like, it's not, it's nothing crazy. There's just some hijinks as they go around New York City.
Yeah, Julian's story is pretty straightforward.
Yeah, she doesn't want to leave New York, so she has to convince, blah, blah, blah. It works. She gets the keys. Hallelujah. And then we move on to Zoya and Shan. So Nick is packing up the apartment, and even he owns up that this could be a bit Zoya's fault. At school, Zoya's in a study hall for her academic probation, where she meets Shan. And Shan induces anaphylactic shock from the teacher's Clif Bar on purpose. And then she convinces Zoya to play hooky with her just for the day. Shan's character, like, she really is doing the most and really making an impact here.
Oh yeah. There's like no filter, but also like, yeah, she's really all over the place.
She's very like convinced that Zoya should not be like hanging out with the Julian type crowd. And I would just like to say, I don't think she should be hanging out with Shan either.
Right. Like, because Shan, as we'll see, like, pickpockets an old lady and then, like, stuffs her, like, but, like, she obviously doesn't do it because she needs the money. She does it because she wants to take, like, her nail card. Like, this old lady's, like, nail, like, her, like, get,
it was, you know, like, a Pinkberry loyalty card.
Right, like a punch card. Yeah. And, like, and then she takes this, like, Louis Vuitton billfold and just dumps it in a USPS, like a mailbox. So, like, assuming that it'll probably get back to the old lady, which, like, it's like everything that Shan does is like that. It's like, okay, it seems like weird and kind of nefarious, or it seems like good hearted and then it turns into like nefarious. So she's really all over the place. Like, everything she does has a like caveat to it.
Yeah, she just like moves through the world with like pretty reckless abandon. And it's interesting, but yeah. So Shan reminds Zoya that she has nothing of her own in the city and everything has been decided for her by Julian, which hasn't really worked out for her. But like, now is everything going to be decided by Shan? Like, it still is not really like a Zoya having agency over her own experience in the city.
Right, because Shan is also a super strong character. So, like, they're basically, she's trying to, like, shed this light on, hey, Zoya, like, nothing, you don't like the city because nothing is your own. But, like, also, now I'm going to force you to get nail art, like, that you've expressed that you don't probably like. Like, I don't think she doesn't like nail art because Julian doesn't like nail art. I think she doesn't like nail art because she just does, you know, because she doesn't want long fingernails, you know?
She, like, gives me Willa from the first season. Do you remember Willa, who was like Jenny's friend in season two, who like burned all of the designs in the trash can and stuff? Like, that's kind of what I feel about Shan. Like, she will think that she's better because she's not like the Julian or not like the Blair of the situation,
right? But she's still burning down the building too. Right, yeah. Exactly. Like, she would be really hard to keep up with in that, like, she's so all over the place. And she, just because she's not reckless in the same way as Julian and like Audrey and Luna and Monet, doesn't mean that she's not reckless.
Yeah. And I just got to say, like, please stop bringing in new characters. There's just so many.
Yeah. I think Shan was memorable, but yeah, like, I didn't dislike Shan's character. Yeah. I have a feeling she's going to be here for a minute, which, like, I don't mind. I didn't dislike her, but I don't know that she's going to be like a permanent fixture.
She's also just not, like, she seems like such a caricature to me, like the aesthetic of it. It's like, oh, she's very like alt or whatever. I don't know. I just, I want,
I think you
more...
say later on, she's very like Janice Ian, which like is so true. Like, she's just, she's supposed to be the complete polar opposite of Julian, which is fine, but she like, she's like a foil to Julian, I think, for Zoya. And I think she's easily replaced in this. I think they like give her a setup in the beginning, like, my parents want to send me to military school next semester. This girl does not go to school here in season two.
Yeah, maybe. But I think, I don't know. I feel like we don't, see the end of her when we see, quote unquote, the end of her.
Right. I think she's easy to write out. She's going to get her arc and then she's going to be written out of the show. Like, I think she's easily like written off.
Like a
off.
Willa, for example.
Right. Exactly. Like, we don't need her long term. I like her. I like the girl who plays her. I think she's funny, but I think she's like kind of like sort of like a ghost of Christmas something or other, and she's gonna show Zoya what she needs to know and then she'll be gone.
I just think they need to do more with the characters that are like the fixtures on the show and stop bringing in like all these other people. I felt the same way about like Jameson and Rex in the other episodes. Like, I kind of feel this way about this new grandmother. Like, all of these new people that they keep bringing in, it's like, even like the Scots and Tatis or whatever of the world, like, can we just have storylines with like the people that we actually have on the show?
Right Exactly. I think like we don't like how we There's discussed enough. Last episode, we don't know that much about Audrey or even Max. Like, what are they? We don't know about
give
like
Luna
them.
And Monet more to do.
Right, exactly. Like and Luna and Monet could be doing some of this stuff too. They could be furthering the plot more than just like standing aside and planning shit, you know? Like, they definitely could be giving them more to do.
Anyway, so Zoya spends the day with Sean, lying to her dad that she's out with Julian instead of telling him that she made a new friend. She arrives home to Julian and Julian's grandmother, and then her dad grounds her for the lie. Shan arrives the next day with Ethiopian food while Nick is out at the school's holiday fundraiser, and Shan convinces Zoya to sneak out again and, of course, takes her straight to the fundraiser where they observe from the rafters, because that makes sense.
I also find it interesting that Shan has been like going to school with these people for years and years, presumably, or as she says, and like Shan has no other friends. Like, we like, is that going to be something we find out about, or is she just like another like lone wolf just traveling through the school? Like, it seems kind of weird that you would be going to school with these people for years. Not specifically that she'd be friends with Julian, but we don't meet any of Shan's friends. Like, that, I don't think she's long for this world, certainly. But and
I
also
think that I think that the Julian like friend group is very insular. Like, I don't think
but
that
we don't
they
get any friends for Shan, you know? Like, why is Shan like automatically just spending the day with this chick she just met?
Fair, but I don't need Shan to have like a bunch of new friends.
No, and like, it's just another thing that like, I feel like we're getting a clue that like Shan is not going to like introduce Zoya to all of her friends, and we have like this big like other part of the show. I think Shan is like very, she's not long for the show, but yeah, I think it's interesting also that Zoya specifically doesn't tell Nick that she's out. She says that she's with Julian as opposed to saying she's with a new person that she made friends with at school, which like, you would think presumably he would like that she made a new friend at school. And I feel like it's very specific that like, she knows Nick is not going to like Shan.
No, but it's also sort of full circle, because in initial episodes, like maybe in episode one, she says like, oh, I'm going to go hang out with a new friend that I met at school, and doesn't say Julian. So it's almost like full circle now that she can say that she's hanging out with Julian and not a new friend.
Right, exactly.
So,
So halfway through the performance at the fundraiser, Nick invites Zoya to the Nick invites Zoya, even though she's supposed to be grounded. She runs downstairs with Shan and accidentally runs directly into her dad. Shan confesses for her and tells Nick that Zoya is crumbling under the pressure to meet his expectations, especially in light of her recent string of failures. Nick reassures Zoya that she is not a burden on him. This was awkward. Right, but like, such an awkward conversation for your friend that you've known for 24 hours to be sharing with your dad.
Yeah, I also don't think, I don't know, I don't think that was really fully real.
Right, and like, it's like, so Shan is like psychically perceptive, because we don't see any like conversations about them that much, about like Shan, like how, like, oh yeah, your daughter's just a giant failure, and obviously you don't like love her because of it, like, is what it kind of sounds like. And it's,
she's just a different kind of manipulator. Like, she's still a manipulator just like Julian, but it's just like a slightly different kind.
Right, exactly. It's almost like a little bit more overt, I would say. Like, it's pretty clear what Shan is doing. I just don't know. We don't know why yet, I guess.
No, we don't. Not quite. Maybe we'll learn. We don't really in the next one either. So
no, but Shan's, I don't know if Shan's role is minimal. Yeah, exactly.
We'll see. So then we get into, I think, the more interesting portions of the episode. We got to stop starting these out with the least interesting parts. But we give you something to look forward to. So this next one is the Obi and Heidi and Max of it all. So we have another new character, Heidi. And this is one that we got some like preview of because it was like announced that Catherine Gallagher was joining the cast. If you're unfamiliar with Catherine Gallagher, she was on Girls.
New season one.
Oh, You season one. Who am I thinking of? She wasn't on Girls, right?
Mm-mm. No, I don't think so.
You season one. Maybe that's why I'm thinking of that. Anyway, daughter of Peter Gallagher of Sandy Cohen from the OC fame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't he like live in? Isn't he one of the? Maybe not. Never mind. Okay.
Huh?
I thought he like was somebody that you had seen like in your life before.
No. Okay. Oh, we're thinking of somebody else.
Okay.
I'll tell you who, but they look a little similar, but yeah, completely different person.
Okay.
So yeah, is it my turn or is it yours?
It's yours.
Okay. Obi's sister Heidi comes to town to wrap up an acquisition. Okay. And then wants to whisk him away to Munich with her for the holidays. Another surprise, she's engaged, which comes as a massive shock to not only Obi, but also to Max, whose V card she swiped once upon a time. Max has found another reason to fully unravel. This is like, you know, yet another thing that sets Max off. Later, Obi goes to dinner to meet Klaus, Heidi's fiance, and Max joins. It's all very German. There is a conversation that Max has with Gideon, and Gideon has to use the 16-year-olds as the only like working relationship example in this universe. He says like, oh, Aki and Audrey are great. And like, right. That's all he has.
And then like Max hits him with a string of like adult relationships that are crumbling. Yeah. Like, that are
crumbling.
Yeah.
I also thought it was just a good thing to flag up that like Max expresses his misbelief that like he will never fall in love, which means plot-wise, one day I think we're gonna get a Max Wolf who's in love. And I, for one, can't wait.
Right. And I think it's really interesting. So the first time I watched this episode, I missed it, but they definitely reference that Heidi is 20 years old, mm-hmm. which like not even the being engaged part, which like I still think is odd. Oh, okay. Yeah, which I think is odd, but like the fact that she's like completing mergers and acquisitions as a fucking 20-year-old, like in Singapore and shit, like it's like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, because it's like, did you go to college? Did you not?
Right. And like
college.
Like as a woman who's been 20 before, no one fucking takes you seriously. Like, I'm sorry, but there's nobody who's taking a 20-year-old seriously. Mm-hmm. I don't care how good you are at German. Like, no one in Singapore is taking you seriously trying to like acquire a fucking company. Like, I just don't believe it.
I took her seriously. I thought she was like so I thought it was like definitely an interesting character to bring in when she's
if she's like, 25, she's sort of, I get it. I fully accept it if she's 25, but they can't with Max being 17.
Yeah, when the whole point is like she took Max's virginity and like if right. she's 25, then it doesn't
that,
really
that's
work.
That's weird. Exactly.
So I think we're just supposed to assume like, you know, she's 25, but like she's not really 25.
Like, right, exactly. Like I so, buy that she's 25 and doing the work that she's pretending like she's doing, but not like at 20. I'm like, I buy that she took his virginity at 25 as opposed to like what she's pretending to do at 20, you know?
Yeah, we're just gonna gloss right over that. So right. I did like that she is able to sort of needle Obi. She says like whatever sister you're dating now, because it's hard to keep track, mm-hmm. but she knows at least that they're sisters. I also, funny callback, that it's an engagement to a German Klaus. I wonder if Obi's sister is taking Lily Vanderwoodson's seconds here with German Klaus.
I totally missed that. I missed that one, that reference. Like,
no,
I don't.
but like that was one of Lily Vanderwoodson's ex-husbands.
Yeah, I missed that. That like was a. I forgot
Okay.
all about that. Yeah.
These are the things that I
There's only
catch.
so, but like obviously there's only so many German male names that we can use on TV these days. So
Yeah, there's
God.
also so only so many like, you know, divorcees, new flame names that we can use. We have to use Raoul a couple of times.
Right. I did love that that at the dinner Max calls him Santa Claus, which I don't know why it cracked me up, but just then he like reaches over the table to shake his hand. He's like, "Oh, Santa Claus." I'm like, "Oh God."
It's good. It's good stuff. I also thought it was very funny, like, because they pan over to that table where they're having dinner, and I'm like, oh my God, these losers are drinking orange wine. How annoying and pretentious.
Right.
And then Max says the exact, like, same thing.
It looks so
and I was
gross.
Like, oh my God, ugh, I roll at this orange wine. And, like, Max had the exact same thought. So
right,
I thought it was
right.
funny.
I noticed it, like, definitely the second time. I don't even remember if I noticed it the first time, but yeah, I was like, ew, why is that wine orange?
Orange wine is like a trendy like thing, but it's not that good.
It reminds me of the fruit wines from Schitt's Creek that they make fun of like all five seasons. So
your turn.
So after dinner, Max tells Obi he overheard Heidi discussing a deal to acquire part of Klaus's family's hotel chain, which they reason could only be beneficial for Klaus since the chain currently needs an influx of cash to stay afloat.
Oh, this must call back to the movie.
The movie?
This is You Can't Take It With You.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was like, what movie? Heidi attends the fundraiser with Obi, and where he questions her about her relationship. She senses Max is meddling and tells Obi that his friend is very clearly hurting and to trust that she knows what she's doing in her own relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is where it's revealed that she's 20 years old, and it's also revealed that one of the family nicknames for Obi is Otacado, which is adorable.
It is super cute. Everything, like, everything she, like, all of her little jabs and jokes to him are really cute.
Yeah, she sort of humanizes him a bit more.
Right, and their chemistry is like brother and sister, I buy fully.
It works. The part that I didn't buy is, like, Obi putting up with all of the things that Max was saying about her. I didn't really
right.
buy that part. That was like very uncomfortable.
Right. No one's talking about your sister like that in front of you as like if you're Obi, like he's not saying that stuff repeatedly
in
front of
you.
You
just tell Max like, please stop. Like, and right. you also don't. I get that it's Max's character, but like you shouldn't put up with like all the crazy, insane things that he was saying.
Even
was
if she
wild.
Talks the way she does, like how she like talks about how like dirty Klaus is, like and how Obi's just like, oh, that's gross. Like, even if she talks like that, like Max is not going to talk like that about her, you know?
Yeah. Max has some boundaries, you know, very few, but some. And it really
minimal.
Doesn't seem like he,
right.
it was weird to see like him and Obi interact so much because I just don't think of them as friends.
I do love that when he later he makes the phone call and Obi like speaks in German to like a business manager or something like that,
yes,
and he hangs
hot.
Up. Yeah, he's like, I forgot you could just do that. That's hot. And I'm like, yeah. Okay. Like, I love that like we're acknowledging that they're not really friends.
We're acknowledging that like it's the kind of thing that he would just forget.
Right. And be like, oh yeah, I forgot about it. You can be hot every once in a while. It's like it says we all.
Also, why did they keep calling Obi Jr.? Like, isn't he specifically Otto Bergman the third? But they keep calling
maybe
him
Grandpa's
Jr. And I'm like, did everyone else forget that he's actually the third?
Right. I guess it's better than calling him like kiddo, but
I don't know. I guess it's a way to call him like, you know, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I just, it's like, don't call him Junior. He's the third. His dad is Obi Jr.
Right. Which like, wouldn't they call him, I don't even want to say it, but wouldn't they call him like Trey? Like, isn't that like.
Yeah,
like,
that's yeah. the thing that people do.
For thirds.
Yeah. So Max convinces Obi to call his family's business manager, I guess, and request the most recent file on the Wagner Group deal. Then they both confront Klaus and Heidi. The names Klaus and Heidi are, and Otto. It's just all so funny to me.
It's so German.
Yeah.
it's like the sound of music.
Yeah, literally. They both confront Klaus and Heidi with the information, only to find out that it was Heidi who was going behind her fiance's back. Klaus realizes that he can't trust her and breaks up with Heidi, not Obi, just like ending his sister's engagement, like Jesus. So Max tries to get Heidi to hook up by reminding her that people like the two of them don't fall in love. And she basically tells him to grow up. Are you okay? You good?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Okay. I'm like reading ahead. I'm sorry. Okay.
She basically tells him to grow up. And while that might be the case for him, it isn't for her. And then Gideon and Max return to their brownstone to find divorce papers waiting.
Right. So the only thing I couldn't like, so the very end of the episode, I don't know why we say this, but like Obi is just like sprinting down the street, like crying. It's the funniest thing.
It's really, like, it's no, so it's like, the whole thing is to just set up that he's spiraling so that his actions before the next episode make sense.
Sure. But he's just like running in like a full like pea coat, trench coat situation and like crying, but it's like actor face crying, like it's like it's just, it was so funny, I couldn't stop laughing. I'm like, every inch of sympathy you got from me is gone because this is too much.
Yeah, it's a little melodrama, but that's what I'm here for.
Right. Right.
Also, what I'm not here for is I can pretend I understand what's going on with this hotel business deal, or I can tell you the truth. Like, I don't get any of it.
I like got it up until the point where like they don't explain why it's actually beneficial to her. Right. Exactly. Yeah, like it doesn't make sense that like, so why wouldn't she say like, I was like wanted to do you this favor. I wanted to make sure both of our companies were successful or something like that. Like it doesn't make sense because that they like reiterate that like it's only beneficial for his family. And yet she's the one who's going behind his back. Like why would she do that if it wasn't good for her? So, it was, I got it up until like the very end. And I was just like, well, also, does she proceed with the business deal? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I think she does. I think what we know about Heidi is like she does.
Right. She's like, well, I'm going to be sad, but we're moving forward.
I think like it was a weird thing to have happen. And I also like rewinded and was like, wait, can I figure out what they mean by this? No, I couldn't. So that's me.
Yeah. I think I understood. I just, it turned and then I'm like, okay, I have no idea. Like, I understand like why a hotel would need like an influx of cash. Like, I get all of that. But like, I mean, I didn't understand at the end. I'm like, okay. Feel like this could be worked out. Mm-hmm. Also, if meddling by 17-year-olds.
The person who owns the hotel and that'll solve all the problems, right?
Exactly. That's
find an Uncle Jack, sell Blair. Like, that's, there you go.
Right. Well, and I think it was just like to keep relations. The reason why they were like, oh, it makes sense for him to have this long engagement is because they can essentially like milk this relationship between both of them. And it also works for their companies. But yeah, the turn is what I didn't understand. But what do you do?
Yeah, it is crazy to me just how much like OB is able to just like call someone and he finds out all of the information that he needs to know always. Like that is one of their favorite little like plot cheats that they use. Like when he calls someone and finds out everything about the guy who worked at like the New York Magazine or whatever, who was like stalking
Zoya. They use it for Aki too.
Yeah. But I feel like it's more weird for Obi to be able to do.
Right.
He's just like, he can just call anyone and like make things happen, which is a little superpower.
Right. Exactly. And it makes sense for Aki because he works in media and he's usually trying to find out like actual like information about what's going to be reported in the media. Where like Obi, it's like weird, like financial stuff. Yeah. It doesn't, I don't know. It's like he has like some like PI on call or something. It is weird that, which like I presume, I don't know, I'm not wealthy enough to know that that's something that you could or could not do. So
well, he wasn't calling PIs, he called like his parents' business manager and then before he called like the Dumbo Hall people, so he just like has connections to all of the different people that he needs to be connected to,
right? Which like solid networking, I guess. Good for you. I also don't know that like a business manager is like handing over that information to a 17-year-old about like sending like those PDFs. I don't know that that's a thing, but I also don't think a 20-year-old is going to be like in charge of acquiring companies. So
yeah, very true. So the Aki and Audrey section is the next one. It's one bullet point. Mm-hmm. So this episode is really like, I don't know. This was a weird episode to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of jumping around. Again, I think it was like setting up the next episode, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So Aki and Audrey are never the never just a couple. Aki and Audrey are on the prowl for a third since Max has turned down their offer ad infinitum. They try hooking up with a dancer, and then they call Jameson, who was the Ralph's barista. But something feels off, so they call a professional. They call Dr. Orna.
It makes it sound like they call a prostitute.
No, they call a professional to help counsel them. they decide they need professional help. So they call Dr. Orna Goralnik, and who tells them that they are expecting their relationship to fulfill more than what is actually possible because they're 17. You may eventually realize that what they're missing is Max, not just for sex, but like to be a part of their relationship. And now I just want to rewatch Couples Therapy because I love her so much. Such a good show.
Yeah. Also, like, TV shows love having underage people on dating apps. You see this on like Riverdale as well. Stop it. Like, not a thing. Not something they can do.
Right. I also don't think that this is the advice that Dr. Goralnik is giving them, because she like actually deals with like real married and unmarried couples. Like, she like is really – that show is so good, and I recommend it to anybody. It's just like – it's such an insight that like you don't expect to get, and like –
Wait, is that actually the couples therapy therapist that they call
it? Yes. Him? Yeah, oh, that's funny. She's from the show, the couples therapy show. That's the doctor. And she has like a little dog that is in her therapy session. So she's so cute. Like, she's really cool. And I don't think she's giving two 17-year-olds this advice. I think, again, yeah. I think her advice is split the fuck up because you're 17.
Literally.
Like, if you're not being fulfilled.
Sunk cost fallacy, get out of here. Like,
right. If you're not being fulfilled as a 17-year-old, you move on and find somebody who can fulfill you. But,
or you just move on and, like, fulfill yourself for a little bit.
Right. Exactly. I think, like, they are – if you're really, like, connected, you can do more as friends at this point and be friends. And then if you come back together, that's great. But, like, right now you're not fulfilling what you need from each other. So – that doesn't mean add a third to your relationship.
No, it does not. It certainly does not. But we'll see how it works. I'm glad plot-wise that this is where we're going.
Right. And I love that, like, I don't know how or why they needed her, but I love that she was here.
Yeah, I didn't catch that at all. I was like, okay, we're getting a random therapist. Didn't catch her name.
No, yeah, no, she's the couple's therapy therapist. That's why they were like the world-renowned, and I know exactly who we need to call. I'm like, there's just no way you're calling her.
Fair. So yeah, now we're moving on to the teachers. This is the last section, but I think this one has the most sort of like shockwaves that end up getting sent out through. So the, you know, last but certainly not least. So Kate calls Scott's school to plant that he might be supplying his student athletes with performance enhancing drugs, causing a full investigation. And that's after Max sort of plants the seed that Isaiah, was that his name?
Yeah.
That he was using performance enhancing drugs of some sort. With him out of the way, Kate and Georgior meet Tots and Sharon. Thank you so much, Olivia, for making me say that. to try and reclaim Gigi. But Tati and Sharon are out for blood and not giving up without a fight. Wendy appears and proposes an alliance. She and Jordan sneak into Tati's apartment and find out she's involved in an SAT cheating scandal, which they use to take her down.
Yeah, I loved Wendy asking Kate, which is more ballsy, breaking and entering or impersonating a federal agent. And Jordan says, it's not a competition, Wendy. And she says, everything's a competition. I'm like, oh my God, am I Wendy?
Yeah, yeah, sure. I also think, like, I know at the beginning of the show, there was a lot of discourse about like how annoying the teachers are. And I do think that they almost needed to like bring in a worse batch of teachers to make like Wendy right. and Kate and Jordan like not because they're seem
so,
like the worst.
I love them so much now.
Like, I know. We've really like warmed to them. And I think part of that is having like the foil of Jordan and Tati and Sharon.
Well, and I think when you're trying to get to know, like, because old Gossip Girl, we never like got to know the teachers. So like with old Gossip Girl, you're so interested, like, and I came into this very interested in like, I want to know Julian and Zoya, like mm-hmm. these are the people I'm focused on, and even like the parents a little bit, but like the teachers certainly not. So it was like these people are just in the way right now, and then now that they like we've gotten to know them a little bit better, I think yeah. they play much better.
I would agree with that. And I also think like they sort of take the spot of like the Rufus and Lily kind of, because I don't think yeah. we're as invested in any of like the parent things as we might have been in like Rufus and Lily. So I mm-hmm. think this takes that right. level. I also
in
think
like their personal development. Yeah. We don't have as many parents and like they're much more periphery. Mm-hmm. They're yeah. These are adults like we can be a little bit more invested in.
Yeah. And I think they almost need to have characters in this age range so that you keep like the people who grew up watching
right Girl, these are like, our contemporaries them. Or like realistically yeah. they're supposed to be like my contemporaries at the minimum. They might be a little mm-hmm. I don't know if they're like 26
Kate's younger than me. Kate is supposed to be younger than me, I think. She's right. 25.
Right, but yeah, so like these are supposed to be like the people we relate to, which like I think in the beginning was super annoying, but like now it's like okay, I get it, like I get yeah. this.
Yeah,
not so much Sharon or Scott, but
no, I do not relate to Sharon or Scott.
No, no.
Or Wendy or Jordan. Frankly, maybe Kate a little bit, but like barely.
I wish I related closer to Wendy. I feel like Wendy like has a good setup, as mm-hmm. Kate points out. But like, I think Wendy's like retort to that, if it wasn't, should have been, you're just jealous. I think it was actually basically marry well and then but lie on your taxes. Yeah, get a good alimony and then lie on your tax statements. But yeah, I think – but they're, like, age-appropriate. But yeah, so Jordan and Kate pay a visit to a very angry Sharon's rent-stabilized apartment, who is knee-deep in a bottle of Maker's Mark, so that's never good. She tells them her plan to, like, Gossip Girl implode by posting all the tips they have ever received, plus who sent them. At the fundraiser, Jordan and Wendy and Kate plant their phones in Susan's purse, then drop them all to the ground, all to get her away from her. Sorry.
This is her name Sharon or Susan?
Oh, it's – oh, my God. No. I think it's Sharon.
Oh, no. Okay.
Oh, shit.
I don't know which one it is.
Yeah.
Sharon, Susan, same difference.
Did a full one. Switch though. I'll go with Sharon.
I like you just reading it and not even noticing either.
No, Sharon, Susan, same thing. So they drop all the phones to the ground and in a way to like scramble them up and take hers. Kate convinces Sharon to relinquish control of Gossip Girl back to them by telling her this plan isn't how they get all the kids to behave better.
Mm-hmm. But then they watch two girls physically fighting over a guy, which is the Pippa and Bianca characters that we mm-hmm. met in the Halloween episode, who are always the, like, they're supposed to be the ones that are actually similar to like Serena and Blair. So they're fighting in the chocolate fountain or whatever, which is a callback mm-hmm. to season one when Serena and Blair are fighting in the fountain at Yale. And then they realize that Sharon may actually have been right. So Gossip Girl releases a Google sheet with every tip that anyone has ever sent in. And all I gotta say is God bless Google Docs and Merry Christmas.
Right, right. Do we think they kept this or they had to make it?
I don't know. I don't think that Sharon has the facilities to put this together. I think that... you know what I mean? Like, she's not able to do that. But I think that Jordan, there's the possibility that, like, plausibly he could write a code that would like go through all of the Gossip Girl messages and like pull out who right. sent it and like the content of the message. But just knowing like how many tips they were probably getting, like, you know, what 20 to 30 tips a day, and putting all of that in like a Google Doc situation would take a long time. So I would assume that like right. Jordan wrote a code.
Yeah. So it is Sharon. And they,
I was wondering why you were on your phone.
Yeah. I'm like, I gotta know which it is. And I knew she was on the episode cast list. But I don't understand. I think, and Jordan makes a comment, like, I wish it wasn't so easy because I liked going up against Sharon. I'm like, okay, that's because like Sharon has like the least to gain by being Gossip Girl. Like Sharon,
she's got a thing, like they have blackmail that they have on her, so she can't release it now.
Well, and like Sharon doesn't want to be Gossip Girl. Like Sharon doesn't want to like be an Instagram runner, you know, running an Instagram. Yeah. I think Sharon, it makes sense that Sharon has like a bomb to drop and then delete the whole thing. Like that makes complete sense because Sharon isn't trying to like she doesn't have the time or the patience to go through this shit.
Sorry, I was getting Sharon and Tati confused. Yeah, Tati has the one doing the SATs.
Yeah, Sharon has nothing to like lose by giving it. Like she also has nothing to gain. Right, but she has the least to gain. Like she just wants to like drop her bomb and then leave. And I think they kind of like give her some sort of reassurance. It's like we'll take this off your hands is the argument that they get to make for her because she doesn't want to do this. Like she's not in this for the long haul. Even when they were talking to Tati on the side of the street or like at the street corner, like Sharon's like, oh, she's going to be the one who figures all that out. Like I'm just here to be here, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was she the one that they said was QAnon?
I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me.
That checks out with the critical thinking skills. But
I did like that Jordan made a reference when they were in her apartment that, like, I assume it was, like, he was referencing that. He was like, does any of this look familiar to you? And I think he was referencing that Sharon's apartment was, like, decorated similarly to Kate's apartment.
Oh.
Like, it was, like, wicker and older. It was definitely, like, a older woman's style of decor, and I think he was making a reference because she's like shut up, and like I really think that the joke was like you decorate like an old lady.
that was really funny. Did he say that in her? For some reason I thought he said that in
it was in Sharon's apartment.
Okay, why did I think that was in Scott's apartment, asking if things looked familiar to her?
No, because I don't think Jordan was ever in Scott's apartment with
that makes sense
Kate, not in this episode.
I don't know.
Because they were sitting on like a, because it was also like a studio. So her bed was there and then there was like a wicker bench situation in front of her bed.
Yeah. And Jordan was like street furniture.
Yeah. It was, oh my God, it was so funny. I'm like, oh, Jordan killing it with the zingers.
Yeah.
I like Jordan roasting.
Take your hydro flask and go.
Yeah. I do like Jordan having like a little bit. He's definitely on more equal footing this last half of the season with Kate, and I like that much more for them. Like, I don't need Jordan chasing after Kate. I need Kate, like, respecting Jordan and him, like, giving her little jabs. I love that.
Yeah, I think that that's very true. It helps. So, no new predictions. I don't think either of us got new points. And then episode in winner and loser. Winner, I'm going to have to say, like, Kate for getting Gossip Girl back.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, if it's not the trio of Kate, Jordan, Wendy, it's Kate.
Yeah. Loser, Obi?
Yeah. I think Max. Max.
Yeah, his parents Max is a pretty, divorced.
Yeah, and like he's kind of told off by Heidi. Yeah, my loser's Max, but yeah, I agree with the winner. I just think,
like, the person who goes from highest to lowest, I feel like is Obi.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I see that. I still think Max is my loser in this one. I think Max is my loser last time, too. sorry, Max. That makes me sad. Okay.
Maxie. It won't be again. Turn around, you know?
Yeah.
And spoiler. Okay. That's all we have. Thank you so much.
Yeah, if you enjoyed our podcast, do a quick tab over to our Apple Podcast page. Rate us 5 stars. If you're feeling generous, leave a review. That'd be amazing.
Yes. Be sure to talk about our podcast to anyone who will listen, have friends that watch the show. We'd love it if you could tell them that our show exists.
Yeah, and if you have anything you want to share or comment with us about the show, you can email us at youroneandonlysourcepod@gmail.com or slide into our DMs on Instagram at youroneandonlysourcepod. You can follow us there too.
Yep.
New
Thanks, guys.
Episode 12 coming soon.
Coming at you. Bye.
Bye.